Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
Focusing today on international trade and food assistance programs, and it could not be more timely for a number of reasons.
Not just a member of Congress, but a farmer from California. Jim Costa is chairman of the House Ag Subcommittee on Livestock.
But the fact is, efforts to ensure that America agriculture, which it has traditionally done, provides a sort of support, not only to feed all of our people, but to also help in places of the world where there is hunger and food insecurity has been a tradition of previous farm bills. So we're going to look at that.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
I think all of you know, I like to say as a third generation farmer, still my primary source of income, that food that we grow in America is a national security issue.
That's Representative Jim Costa from California. He's chairman of the House Ag Committee's Subcommittee on Livestock and Foreign Ag.
We don't always look at it that way, but I think maybe at the beginning of the pandemic with the closure of restaurants and schools, people began to realize and seeing some scarcities in grocery shelves that, in fact, we can't take it for granted, that the hardworking American farmers, ranchers, dairymen and women, the farm workers every day do so much with less than 4% of the nation's population to put that food on America's dinner table every night. Let us never, ever take it for granted. And not only can we feed America with the highest quality of products, the most nutritious products, and we every day we work hard to make it better at the most cost-effective level, although we know this inflationary spiral we're in right now is impacting the cost of those groceries. The fact is nobody, as that song goes, does it better than the American farmer. And as stewards of our environment as well. Obviously, I'm very passionate about that from my own experience. But the fact is we got problems. I wanted to send a copy of a story that I thought was very good. I bring it to your attention, and I would urge you to look at it. The title this morning is Russia's War in Ukraine. We see the storm coming, and the U.S. struggles to contain a deepening global food crisis. And that's in part why we want to have this subcommittee hearing here this morning. Putin's war in the Ukraine has been horrific. And I think we all have our very personal feelings about what we've seen and the courageous Ukrainian people fighting for their independence and their sovereignty. He is a pariah. And I think he's a war criminal. But the fact is that the devastation that he is playing upon the people of Ukraine is a wake-up call for all of us, I think. And I think he's, in a strange sort of way, has brought us together. We needed to be together before this. But I think we'll see continuing themes from the testimony of our witnesses and the questions that we ask about what this means. We've already seen the disruption of global grain and fertilizer markets. We've seen a significant downstream effect on countries reliant on Black Sea trade. And for this reason, I've signed on to a letter with many of my agricultural colleagues requesting that the USDA and the USA use resources available in Bill Emerson's humanitarian trust to help address food insecurity. The trust is one of many vital farm programs that we look forward to hearing about today from our witnesses. I believe that, and I've had conversations, I suspect many of my colleagues have, with Secretary of Agriculture and folks in the USDA, that we're going to have to look at other resources, with the Commodity Credit Course Conservation Program and others, to provide funding to optimize American farmers and ranchers to use their land and resources that allows for surplus production in various commodities, especially in our grain and wheat areas, that many countries don't have.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
When you look at the unrest in Eastern Europe and Russia's aggression into Ukraine, it really causes quite a severe stress on the agriculture community globally.
Andy Levine is the CEO of the American Seed Trade Association, ASTA.
Obviously, it impacts those farmers in Ukraine, but the Ukraine is really a breadbasket for the world in wheat production and some maize production that's principally used in Europe. And if you even think about it, coming down to some of our companies multiply seed in the Ukraine for distribution in Europe and globally. So that impact on that region is pretty severe, and we feel for the people that are there and the challenges that they have and will have going into the spring and summer and into the future. But they're in the same situation as our folks in the Midwest right now with respect to looking at wanting to plant. You're waiting for things to warm up a little bit, and just think of the other issues that they have in front of them, trying to see whether they're even going to be able to plant a crop this year, let alone try to have a living.
But he's clear that the issues in Ukraine and Russia should not affect seed supplies in the U.S.
I don't see a direct effect here in the U.S. We've got, the beauty of it, Tony, is that we produce most of the seed, especially for the Midwest, and corn and soybeans and wheat and cotton, right near where it's going to be planted the following season. So most of our seed availability in the U.S. will be here. The question is, what will the conflict do to global production when we already have tight stocks globally, and it will impact especially developing countries around the world, and what will that impact have on, just the political and economic lay of the land for those developing countries and their ability to acquire wheat that they need. The U.S. industry, agriculture industry, is working very closely with their member companies to see what they can do to help out the region recover as quickly as possible. We have many companies that have employees there that are first and foremost worried about their employees and their safety and their health and their families. But then secondarily, where do they have supply that they may be able to move in there quickly when the opportunity arises? So that's really what we're looking at. That global impact on just food security is huge, and this is going to strain that even further when we already look at a tight commodity market on a global basis. So that's where I think we're going to see it. It'll put some pressure on pricing here in the U.S. There's just no doubt about it, because things will be so tight.
But he also says an exciting time of the year should begin with good seed stewardship.
This is that special time of the year when farmers have that opportunity to plant the seed and prepare for that next crop and harvest in the fall. And it is that time of optimism and everything. The unique weather we've had this year makes it doubly challenging for farmers to determine when's the best time to go in the ground. I think just last weekend we had places in the Midwest and upper Midwest that had snow again. So your soils are still cool, and we're all waiting with bated breath for them to warm up. But probably the key thing that we look at this time of year is just that treated seed stewardship. How are you making sure that if you're using a grain bin or a wagon to move your seed to your planter, how do you make sure that's cleaned out? How are you making sure that if any seed is spilled when you're transferring into your planter boxes, that that's cleaned up as well or buried so that there's no potential environmental impacts there? It's just that wise use of those treated seeds so we can continue to use that technology in the future to protect the genetics and ensure that the farmers are getting a good stand every year in their crops.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
The USDA's March Hogs and Pigs report places the March 1st inventory of all hogs and pigs at 72.209 million head, down about 3% from last quarter and 2.3% from the prior March compared to pre-report estimates of 1.2% lower.
Dr. Jason Franken is a Western Illinois University ag economist, breaking down the latest U.S. hog inventory report.
The market hog inventory is about 2.4% smaller than a year ago compared to expectations of 1.3% lower. While all hogs and pigs and market hogs fall within anticipated ranges of around 0.5% to nearly 3% lower for both, the breeding herd, the December to February pig crop, and farrowing intentions from March to May and June to August are all somewhat lower than expected. For instance, the breeding herd is 1.9% smaller compared to expectations. It could be up just slightly, but ranging about plus or minus a half a percent from a year ago. Each class of market hog inventories is down compared to the same time last year. The heaviest two weight classes of 120 to 179 pounds and over 180 pounds are about 3.5% and 3.8% lower respectively. Meanwhile, the under 50 pound class and 50 to 119 pound class are about 1% and 2% lower than last year compared to expectations of about 1% and a higher and a half a percent lower respectively. Overall, the number of hogs weighing less than 180 pounds is around 2% smaller than a year ago, and these will be the market hogs arriving at processing plants from April to August. The decline in lighter weight hogs partly reflects that with around 1% fewer sows farrowed and pigs per litter essentially even with last year, the December to February pig crop is almost 1% smaller than a year ago, with all trade expectations that it would actually be higher. Market hogs from this pig crop will arrive at processors from June to August. On a monthly basis, the last time pigs per litter exceeded the prior year was last December. Meanwhile, spring and summer farrowing intentions are down from last year by about 1.5% and 0.5% respectively. These numbers should similarly imply somewhat smaller slaughter in subsequent periods. Cold stocks of meat remain low. According to the USDA cold storage report, cold stocks of pork on February 28th are up 11% from the previous month, but down 1% from a year ago. Poultry stocks are up 6% from the prior month, but down 1% from last year, while beef is up 1% from the prior month and up 1% from a year ago. The USDA forecasts U.S. per capita pork consumption in 2022 at 51.2 pounds per person. Now, prior to COVID-19, U.S. per capita pork consumption reached 52.4 pounds in 2019, or the highest it has been since it was 54.2 pounds in 1981. The U.S. exported 510 million pounds of pork in January, or about 16% less than in January of 2021. While this decline largely reflects shipments to China and Hong Kong decreasing by about 70%, exports to Mexico increased by about 49%. Based on generally weak demand in major pork importing regions, the USDA places total U.S. pork exports for the first quarter of 2022 at 1.58 billion pounds, or about 18% below last year. Second and third quarter U.S. pork exports are anticipated to be about 14% lower and 5% higher than the prior year, respectively, with fourth quarter exports rising nearly 15% over the prior year to about 1.9 billion pounds. Hence, while pork exports are starting off lower in 2022, they should grow in the later half of the year.
Western Illinois ag economist Jason Franken. It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
FAS is USDA's lead international agency linking U.S. agriculture to the world to enhance export opportunities and global food security.
Testifying at a recent hearing for the House Ag Committee Subcommittee on Livestock and Foreign Ag, Daniel Whitley, administrator of USDA's Foreign Ag Service.
FAS supports producers with a network of agricultural economists, marketing experts, negotiators, and trade specialists in Washington, D.C., and nearly 100 international offices covering 180 countries. We are proud that our role in opening and maintaining markets has resulted in billions of dollars of additional U.S. agricultural exports for the benefit of American producers, and that the international food assistance programs and capacity building activities administered by the FAS provide assistance that has helped millions of people worldwide. In addition to our Farm Bill authorized programs, FAS also expands and maintains access to foreign markets for U.S. agricultural products by removing trade barriers, helping to enforce U.S. rights under existing trade agreements, and negotiating new agreements that benefit agriculture. FAS works with foreign governments, international organizations, and the Office of the U.S. Trade Representative to establish international standards and rules to improve accountability and predictability for agricultural trade. We will continue to focus on maintaining and expanding access for U.S. agricultural exports through rebuilding trust with our partners and holding them accountable. Exports of U.S. farm and food products to the world totaled $177 billion in 2021, topping the 2020 total by 18% and shattering the record set in 2014 by 14.5%. For many agricultural products, foreign markets now represent more than half of total sales. U.S. ag exports support more than 1 million jobs here at home and contribute more than $154 billion in additional economic activity. To continue these impressive gains, we cannot rest. We must not rest. We must continue to refine and improve our longstanding Farm Bill authorized programs to ensure that they operate efficiently, effectively, equitably, and sustainably. Our numerous farm bills, Congress authorized and refined an effective combination of ag market development and export credit guarantee programs. These programs are designed to develop markets, facilitate financing of overseas sales, and resolve market access barriers, all of which are goals central to the FAS mission. FAS partners with more than 70 cooperative groups representing a cross-section of the U.S. food and agricultural industry and manages a toolkit of Farm Bill authorized trade promotion programs to help U.S. exporters develop and maintain markets for all of our products. Included under the umbrella of the Farm Bill programs are the MAP program, the TASC program, the EMP program, along with several others. A newly independent study prepared by some of our independent research organizations concluded the effectiveness and the benefits of these programs. The largest market development program operated by FAS is the Market Access Program. Through MAP, FAS partners with nonprofit U.S. agriculture trade organizations, U.S. agricultural cooperatives, nonprofit state regional trade groups, and state agencies to share the cost of overseas marketing activities, such as consumer promotion, market research, and trade show participation. The 2018 Farm Bill makes available $200 million of CCC funds annually for MAP. Funding levels for MAP have showed the impressive gains that can be made for U.S. agriculture by using these programs.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
At Rural Development, our goals for energy are straightforward, reliable, affordable, and clean.
Soshi Torres-Small is USDA's Undersecretary for Rural Development, testifying recently before the House Ag Committee on the energy title.
When communities lean into clean energy, as so many are already doing and have been doing for years, the resulting economic prosperity is clear. It's powerful. Jobs are created, consumers save on their energy bills, and new markets are formed. I'm emphasizing rural electric co-ops today, not only because they're a great partner, but because I think they're ahead of most of us in the way they think about clean energy. For example, we recently awarded a $6 million loan to Roanoke Electric Cooperative in North Carolina. Roanoke is going to use this loan to help their members pay for energy efficiency improvements, from insulation to electric water heaters, as well as electric charging systems. This builds on the work of a program that the co-op started as a pilot in 2015. So far, about 650 co-op members have received retrofits and are enjoying an annual savings of $600 per year. In other words, co-ops got this energy efficiency ball rolling 7 years ago, and now USDA is helping to keep it moving and helping these co-op members to continue and increase their savings. We're also hoping to help pass these lessons on to other communities. Now, that example was in the millions of dollars, but innovation in energy use is often best showcased by its smallest projects. I'm thinking of Three Porch Farm in Comer, Georgia. A sustainably grown flower and fruit farm owned by Steve and Mandy O'Shea. Steve and Mandy's business is known for its presence at farmers markets in Atlanta, Marietta, and Athens. They're also known for their flower arrangements in weddings and other events. They keep their flower arrangements cool in a solar-powered design studio, and the farm runs its vehicles on recycled vegetable oil. These energy choices are a key part of Steve and Mandy's vision and philosophy for their business. When I think about Steve and Mandy, I'm again grateful for the innovation, hard work, and leadership of the people in rural communities when it comes to energy.
But the chairman of the committee from Georgia, David Scott, is concerned.
Following the creation of the energy title in the 2002 Farm Bill, each Farm Bill after that has cut mandatory spending available for the title. Only 20% of the funding for energy title programs were mandatory in our most recent Farm Bill. And let me just clear maybe for some of the folks at home that may not know the difference here. Mandatory money in the Farm Bill is money you can count on. Money that is guaranteed to go into the program. And discretionary money is what it says. It's discretionary. You may get it and you may not. And so that is very important. And this is a significant problem since many of our energy title programs ultimately have not received any discretionary appropriations. And I want to be clear, for the upcoming 2023 Farm Bill, we need to consider what the needs are for our agriculture and forestry sectors, as well as our rural small businesses, in terms of their potential role in producing renewable energy.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
It was nice to see the cash market kind of hold firm here. A little bit of weakness maybe midweek, but largely end of the week positive. Friday's trade came out at 140. Not a low number by most standards and really looking good so far heading into what we would normally see as the highest quarter of the year. Now, on previous radio shows, I've brought up that maybe we might put in the top early. So it remains to be seen. The top so far this year is somewhere about 145 for the five area.
Caitlin McCulloch is director of the Livestock Marketing Information Center, first starting with the current cash market, but then segueing over to the feeder cattle market from last week.
This has been an interesting week. Feeder cattle prices on the cash trade for Kansas generally have been low throughout the month of March, and this week they popped back up. We saw $2 calves, 5-6 weights in Dodge City. And then for those 7-8, we came back close to 160 after being in that middle 150 range for most of the month. So both of those seemingly ignoring maybe some of the things in the grain market or it had that auction happened before prospective plantings came out. So some of this might be timing related in terms of price movements. In terms of boxed beef, another interesting week here, pretty firm, mostly higher on the daily trade for choice cutout. Friday was a little bit weaker, down about $1.25 from the previous day. But overall, the week is going to end up here heading into Memorial Day. And we would expect that boxed beef value to continue to climb as we prepare for summer.
On the heels of the recent USDA acreage reports, there are fewer corn acres. What's that mean?
That certainly was on the mind of the market after this report came out. Now, prospective plantings, it's important to keep in mind, this is the intended acres planted. It's not necessarily what will be planted, but it's your first preview into what farmers are thinking. And they've contended with high fertilizer costs. You have this Ukraine situation putting pressure on the grain markets. And so the pre-report estimates came out about 92 million acres. And prospective plantings was a bit of a shock. That number actually came in very low compared to pre-report estimates, down at 89.5 million acres. The other interesting thing is that soybean acres are expected to outpace corn acres. This would only be the third time in U.S. history, so, and a record high number for soybean acres in aggregate.
And again, obviously very important for feeders, but there's also another concern growing, USDA's expected hay numbers.
Now, that prospective planting hay number can move quite a bit between now and the end of the summer, but that was down about 1%. And the key to that number was the big changes you saw in other hay-producing states. So at least for me, we've been talking a lot about alfalfa. Those acres were expected to see some significant declines. Texas, where we're seeing some more drought now than we have in the last 2 years, down 11% in terms of hay acres. Texas is the number one hay-producing state in the country for total hay. It represented about 9% of total U.S. hay production last year. And so for it to have that significant of a decline might mean you're going to pay a lot more for other hay coming into this year.
And thoughts on Ukraine?
The macroeconomic implications from Ukraine and Russia are pretty significant. LMIC is penciling in a recession at this point within the next 12 months, and that's expected to impact consumer spending. Now, on the feeder cattle side, I think it's going to matter to some degree what this corn market really does. And so we're going to be watching things like weather, how fast planting rolls out. All of those things are going to be important. But again, those signals might be muted compared to previous years because of how many cattle we've already placed.
The takeaway, a recession on the horizon. It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
For the season's first USDA look at crop progress.
Things are starting to grind back to life, especially across the South. But even for some of the small grain crops, planting is underway across the Northern Plains and the Northwest.
USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey starts with a look at corn planting progress.
And of course, as you might expect, it does show that only the far South, the deep South, has any meaningful planting progress. Nationally, 2% of the intended corn acreage planted by April 3rd. That is equal to both the five-year average and the progress on this date last year.
And he has some details.
Texas, among the 18 major production states, leads the country 54% planted. 55% is the five-year average. Only three other states among those 18 have any progress at all, ranging from 1% to 3% in North Carolina, Kansas, and Kentucky.
This is Stephanie Hope in Washington, D.C.